There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Castaway. What's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
And now it's time for Castaway, where, what's my favourite thing, we stand a different lucky guest each week on a desert island with only three books to read. Nothing useful, Karen. Nothing useful except three books. So we really want to hear from you too. So text into 4001 with any books that you'd want to take with you to a desert island. But Karen, you are an award-winning author, an entrepreneur, a luxury travel journalist, an editor. And you're quite familiar with the Literature Festival, aren't you?
I am very familiar with the Literature Festival, yes.
Because you won the 2016 Montegrappa Prize.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, last year. So it was an amazing experience, quite a shocking experience, actually. But considering I'd never written a novel until that moment. But it's such a great opportunity for budding writers who are keen to have their work assessed by a reputable agent.
So your book's out tomorrow, isn't
it? Tomorrow, yes.
What's it called, very briefly?
It's called The Good Mother.
So we're going to talk all about The Good Mother once we've got you off the desert island.
Yeah.
So what's first things first. So what's the first desert island read that you've chosen for us today?
Well, I chose The Power by Naomi Alderman. And when I chose this book, I hadn't realised actually we had Robert with us today, a man, because this book is actually quite frightening for men. So this title actually came up in my book club. It's described as dystopian fiction, but on the author's website, she describes it as a piece of feminist science fiction. So in the novel, very suddenly, almost all the women in the world develop the power to electrocute people at will. Anything from a tiny tingle all the way up to full electric death. So it
mostly men, I assume.
Yes. So it really is an incredible story in itself, but it's also a novel of ideas. What would happen if women had the power to cause so much pain and destruction?
I've never seen Rob look so uncomfortable.
He's looking very uncomfortable right now.
Yeah. Karen's got some electrodes here, actually.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, it's really very interesting. It looks at, you know, the belief that is a commonly held belief about women being naturally peaceful and nurturing. But I can show you in this book, you know, it shows a darker side and how much of gender is in our expectations. But it's also a thriller as well. It's a real page turner. And each of the main characters eventually comes into conflict with the others. So I think, very interesting book to read.
My first question about this is, I get that it's a novel of ideas, and I can already see the themes that come to light with this whole electric shock thing. But what's the actual kind of plot of the story?
Well, it shows about different characters and how they realize that they have this power. So it takes them on a journey of these characters and how they develop and what the consequences are of having so much power. So it's got quite a strong plot, I would say, at the heart of it. And the ideas are almost subtle in a way. The story is really beautifully told. And Naomi Alderman, I think she's a really good writer. She's got lots of awards to her name. So very interesting.
Well, what would you say about the characters? Did you find them likeable? Because that's something that's popping up in my head now, is that it sounds like quite a sinister power to have. Are the characters likeable with it?
Well, in the story, the characters actually have to learn to control their power. So, for example, you have a young teenage girl, for example, who, you know, doesn't know what's happening to her, and she has to learn how to control that power. And of course then there's various incidents that come into play, anything from abuse from other people, and all of a sudden they have the ability to deal with that. So I think the characters are very likable, but it's one of those situations, what would you do if that happened to me? How would I handle it? I think it takes everyday women and gives them something extraordinary.
I'm assuming you've chosen your kind of top three desert island reads as your favorite books, your favourite books of all time?
I wouldn't say my favourite books of all time. I really like page turners. I'm quite an impatient reader, and if something doesn't grab me from the first page, so that's probably why I have chosen this one.
We'll come back to that in just a moment.
Castaway, what's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
So amongst the sand and the seagulls, what's the second book that you've got for us?
I chose Shantaram by Gregory David Roberts. So I know it's a slightly older book from 2003, but I think it's a brick of a book. And I think if you're on a desert island, that's exactly what you need.
I think it's enormously practical. You could use it as a seat. You could kind of chop it up for firewood. It has a whole bunch of different uses.
Not what we consider when we choose our castaway books.
But it's a big tome, isn't it? It's very large.
It is. It is. And I think it's some of those longer books you really struggle to get through. But I can honestly say with this one, it just passed in a pleasure. It was amazing to read start to finish.
When you were talking about your first book, you left off by saying that you can't read anything if it doesn't, you know, keep you turning the page.
Yes.
You like page turners.
Yeah.
So I was surprised when you chose this, because I haven't read Shantaram, but does it reads quite quickly?
Yes, I think so. And I think it's quite vivid. The descriptions are quite vivid. Some of my work involves travel journalism. So for me, the descriptions of Bombay, or Mumbai as it is now, were really incredible. And I think just him as a person and all his experiences, or the main character, Lynn, all his experiences really drive you to turn that page.
Yeah, I mean, I read it 10 years ago. I thought it was an extraordinary... A friend gave it to me as a gift. And I thought it was an extraordinary story. I mean, it really is. It's obviously inspired by a real life story, and there is some debate, I understand, as to how real it is. But it's an amazing story, and I don't know how long it is. It's 800 or 1,000 pages or something. It's huge. Yeah. But for a book of that size, you just cannot put it down. You really cannot. It is a page turner.
And I was reading that he actually wrote some of the book, or started writing the book, when he was in prison, because he obviously went back to prison, and it was destroyed twice by the prison guards. So having just written my own book, I feel, you know, to have your book destroyed,
why would they do that though? Just because
they could, I suppose. But he eventually got it out to great acclaim, and I believe, you know, the movie rights have been bought, although nothing's yet
come out on that.
Yeah. So
I think Johnny Depp's attached to it. He was attached to act in it, I think, and now he's on the kind of producing directing side. Yeah, so we'll see. It just seems to be going back and forth. I don't know when we'll ever see the film.
Yeah.
And the controversy that I was talking about was a lot of people who were involved in the book, or appear as characters in his life, have said that certain things in his account don't really add up. But the main character narrating the story, I mean, this is fiction, but based on his life? Or is it a memoir?
Well, I think that's the controversy, isn't it? I think a lot of it does come from his own personal experience, but how much of that has been embellished, and, you know, the narrative been taken? It's questionable.
Yeah, I think it's published as a work of fiction.
Yes,
in which that's my understanding. In which case, whatever discrepancies there are from the real life is fine and acceptable, in my belief. And it is a cracking good read. I mean, it's an amazing story. I mean, even if he's done half of what he says is done in the book, it's still a lot to do.
Yeah,
I wondered what he actually sounded like as a person, because I think when you hear about him, you have a certain idea of what he looks and sounds like. So this is him talking about the journey that inspired the book.
I found myself in a maximum security prison, serving a 10-year sentence. When I was tortured in that prison, I escaped. I stood on the front wall between two gun towers at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and slid down an extension cord to freedom. I spent 10 years on the run as Australia's most wanted man. I made it to India. And in India, I set up a clinic in a slum, looking after 25,000 people who were slum dwellers in the heart of Bombay City. I was recruited by the Bombay Mafia, and I became a passport forger, a counterfeiter, and a gun runner. I went to two wars. I've been chained to the wall and tortured on two continents, locked up and leg-ironed on three continents. I've been in prisons 9 times in my life, and I've learned a lot of things through 4 years of solitary confinement and through all of the adventures and experiences. The two things are, Be true to love wherever you find it, and be true to yourself in everything that you really are. And what did this wild and wicked life give me? It gave me three things that I know. I know how to love, I know how to forgive, and I know how to write Shantaram, my masterpiece.
I think from that Shantaram is probably a very good desert island read for other reasons as well. So if we take this quite literally and you are stuck on a desert island, you're the only person there and you're going completely mad, it seems like the kind of book that would help you get through that.
Yeah.
That you'd need a book with people going through difficult times of their life.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, clearly it was conceived and first written while he was in solitary confinement, so it does seem rather suitable for
yes.
Desert Island.
Yeah. That's what made me think of it, yeah. We've had some great texts come in. Somebody who's combined texts for economy made me laugh. So they said, currently deciding who I'd electrocute, and then went straight on to say Shantaram. And they said, best first half of a book ever. So there you go. Mm. Your love of Shantaram is definitely shared. We've also had somebody say that your voice is very nice.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so compliments coming in. And also Tom Hiddleston's voice. Someone said no idea what he was saying and nothing intelligent to add, just Tom Hiddleston's voice. Mm. So there we go.
Yeah.
So Shantaram, that's your second desert island read. You had quite a few others on the list that you sent me. So what happened was I asked Karen to send me kind of her top five. She sent me a top six. and then we managed to whittle it down to three to share on the show today. What were the other three that you were going to talk about?
Well, the third one that we actually talked about was one of Philippa Gregory's books. I'm a big fan of Philippa Gregory. I mean, she's written so many. I think probably she's most renowned for her historical novels. So The Boylan Inheritance was one that really came up for me. But she's done so many different series and things like that. And the other one I included on there was quite a new author based in the UK, Gillian McAllister. And she's fairly new. She's done one book, and which was Everything But the Truth. And her second book is actually coming out very, very soon as well. So those were the books that I had. And
that's... You also had The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. Now, the reason I mention this is that your message to me about the books that you wanted to do came a very weird time in my life where I keep seeing The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari.
Yeah.
So it came up in your email. Somebody else had texted in about three times to say, I love The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. And then I kept seeing it in bookshops everywhere. It's following me around.
Yeah.
Perfect book for a desert island again. You know, what are you going to do with your Ferrari on the desert island?
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect choice.
Yeah. But yes, it's one of my favourites.
Okay. Yeah. We'll talk about the Philippa Gregory book when we come back.
Castaway. What's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
So we're stranding Karen Osman on the desert island this week, and she won the 2016 Montegrappa Prize at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. Remind us when your book's out.
Tomorrow.
But that's in the UK. How can we get it here? Do we have to order it online?
Online. Yeah. So it's available on Amazon, UK and US from tomorrow, and then it'll be in Sainsbury's in the UK from the 5th of October for those who prefer, you know, a hard copy.
I like the hard copy as
don't
well.
We all
If you'd like to win a copy of The Good Mother, which we will be talking about in a very short while, Karen has very kindly offered to give a prize copy away today. So text in your name to 4001 with the title of the book The Good Mother. It's not very difficult to do, and you stand a chance of winning a copy of that book. So what's your third book for the desert island that you've got?
So my third book, I chose one of my favorite authors of all time, Philippa Gregory. So she's done many books, particularly very strong in historical novels. But this book, The Boylan Inheritance, I think is the one I would take on, you know, the desert island with me. So because mainly, you know, in terms of historical novels, you can't get more drawn into the drama of Henry VIII's court and all his wives than with her. So her style of writing, her attention to detail, her intensive research, I think that's really going to capture your imagination while you're on that desert island. And this particular book is set in 1539 and the court of Henry VIII, which was increasingly fearful of the moods of the aging sick king. So there's lots of drama in there. And of course, many of you will know her for the author who made her name with The Other Boiling Girl, which was adapted, of course, for BBC and Hollywood.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about that a little bit, actually, because I think when we think of Philippa Gregory, we think of The Other Boleyn Girl and also The White Queen, which was also made recently into a TV series. And I wonder, I mean, this Boleyn inheritance novel, I mean, how far along is that from The Other Boleyn Girl? I mean, is there a sequence to these novels? Is there not?
There is a sequence. I have never read them in order, so I'm constantly having to go back and do my research. But yes, I think these ones talk about Henry's wives and the claim for power of that throne as his queen. So
I think the Other Boleyn Girl's really interesting. Sorry, what were you going to say, Rob?
Well, sorry, what is the sequence? Is The Other Boleyn Girl the most recent?
Well, I think it goes in order of the wives, doesn't it? Mm. But I can't remember what she had the idea for first. Because when I was researching this, The Other Boleyn Girl, I think that was the idea that came to her first, because she was basically saying that the best ideas are sometimes the ones that we don't go looking for.
Yeah.
So if anybody has the answer to this, I think, Rob, are you going to have a look for this as well?
I'm going to see if I can find the answer, yes.
So in the meantime, this is Philippa Gregory talking about The Other Boleyn Girl and how she got the idea for it.
I wasn't really looking for her. I was doing research into the Tudor Navy. I thought I wanted to write a novel set in the Tudor period, something about the seafaring and the movement of Britain, like over the waters, really. And I came across this account of a ship being launched, and the name of the ship was Mary Boleyn. And I had so much not heard of her, like really everybody else, that I thought, that's got to be wrong. That should surely be Anne Boleyn, you know, of whom I have heard. And I was in a library. I looked up her name because I was there. And there she is, but she's not in the historical record very much. She's in the footnotes, so she, you know, most histories mention her, but Henry had other lovers. I mean, she doesn't make any big difference to England. She's not like Anne, whose marriage causes a Reformation. She's just a woman that he had for a few years and then put to one side. But when the more I found out about her, the more interesting I found she was.
So I love that. I love that when, and this happens a lot when authors have their biggest ideas when they're looking up something else, and it completely comes to them unexpectedly. I think that's lovely. What I also found out about Philippa Gregory, and this is a criticism that I think is a little bit unfair, she very much cares about the historical accuracy of the films that are based on her work, and she very much pays attention to that in her novels as well. And there was an interesting article that came out in, I think, like last year, and she said she's very much opposed to filmmakers being tempted to treat historical facts and fiction as one and the same. And she insists now on a clause in her contract with filmmakers to stop them changing any historical elements of her work. So if you think that The Boleyn Girl was adapted in 2008, and this was something that she said in 2016, I wonder whether something that happened... I mean, have you seen the film?
Yeah, a while back, but yes, I'm sure it's because I believe she used to be a professor of history or something. She has a background in teaching, I think, in history, so, and as a researcher. And I think for anyone who's read her books, I mean, that is so visible in her work.
And also just as an author as well, she clearly is very angry about this, because she said that having gone to all the trouble of getting it right in the novel, it's really frustrating to have the content altered when you've put so much time as a novelist of historical fiction for somebody to just change that because it looks better on screen. It must be really annoying. But she did say that she was closely involved in the script when they were adapting The Other Boleyn Girl in 2003, so hopefully she at least managed to keep it slightly on track.
Well, you know, books and TV, they're very different mediums, aren't they? So I think that there needs to be a little bit of adaption there. But yeah, I agree with her when you've done all that work.
So when they come along for the rights for The Good Mother, you're not going to sell them because you don't want to entrust your baby to her.
That's the dream.
Now, apparently here it says that Philippa Gregory has done 15 works in the Plantagenet and Tudor novels series, of which The Other Boleyn Girl was the first in 2001. The Boleyn Inheritance is the fifth in 2006. And then the one that's coming out this year will be the last Tudor in 2017.
Oh, so there you go. So there's another one for your reading list, Karen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, why is it that you like... So this one is about Anne of Cleves and Catherine Howard. So we're at that stage of the wives.
Yeah.
And the way I always remembered it Sorry, Rob, stop laughing at the screen. We've had a text message come in that's very amusing, which I'm not going to read out. So the Boleyn inheritance is Anne of Cleves, Catherine Howard time.
Yeah.
And what is it about that stage that interests you more than, say, the Anne Boleyn one? Because everybody kind of naturally gravitates towards the Anne Boleyn story.
Yeah, I think it's like what you know, what Philip said on that recording you just played. She's always keen to pull out characters who we don't know so much, and I'm particularly interested in women during that time as well, and the vying for power and how clever they had to be to compete in that world. It's quite a fascinating time.
Do you remember the order of what happened to the wives? And do you know the trick to remembering it?
The little rhyme.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've put you on the spot now.
You have put me on
Shall
the
I put
spot.
You out of your misery?
Please.
Divorce beheaded died. Divorce beheaded survived.
Uh-huh.
It's the only thing I can remember from Year 6 history.
Yeah.
that's absolutely it. That's everything. So yeah, that's your third book. So just to recap, what were the three books that we talked about today?
So the first one was The Power by Naomi Alderman. And the second was Shantaram by Gregory David Roberts. And then finally, Philippa Gregory, The Boleyn Inheritance.
And now I want to talk about your book, The Good Mother. So it's a crime thriller. Tell us about it. What's it about?
Yes, it's a thriller, a psychological thriller, and it's about the lives of three women, all with secrets. So you have Catherine, who is a good mother, a good wife, always got dinner on the table for her husband, lots of volunteer work, and she actually undertakes a volunteer assignment to write to a convicted murderer in prison. And then you have Kate, who's a university student at the University of Durham. So she's just started in her first year. Very excited, but quickly finds it very, very overwhelming and starts to struggle until one day a professor takes an interest in her. And then you have Kate, the third character, and she's a young mum to two young children who is longing to escape the drudgery of domestic life and a somewhat unsupportive husband. And everything comes together as the convicted prisoner, his name is Michael, as his parole comes up, all these secrets start to unfold and they all find out how they're connected through this convicted murderer, Michael.
I normally like waiting for the hard copy of a book to come out, but I really want to read that now.
Are you tempted?
I'm very tempted. I think you did your job pitching that one. What was the process of writing it like? And could you tell us a little bit about writing it for the Montegrappa Prize? Because there was a 2,000-word entry that you had to submit along with a synopsis.
Yeah. Well, I was a little bit naughty, and I actually only wrote the first 2,000 words in the synopsis in
Karen.
Order to enter the competition. And but I had the main idea down and won as a result of that. So when the agent actually, you know, said, "Where's the rest of the book?" I said, it's in my head. He said, but you better get writing. So I wrote it fairly quickly because of, you know, of that pressure. And it was probably a good pressure to have, actually.
So,
just over 80,000 words. And, the writing process was concentrated. I can't really say anything else.
I must say, from how you've described the book, I can't wait to read it too, actually. And it's funny because when I heard the title, The Good Mother, you know, it reminds me of Pearl Buck, The Good Earth kind of thing. I don't know why, but it was sort of, I'm surprised to find that it's as you described it. And I can't wait to read it. So what was your inspiration for that?
The inspiration was my own experiences at the University of Durham. So I was a student there back in 1997. And there was actually, I don't know if you're too familiar with Durham, but there's a big prison there,
mm-hmm.
Which I could see from my university dorm room. And the opportunity did actually exist to volunteer to write to prisoners. And of course, I never did that. I was far too busy studying. But that concept always intrigued me. You know, what would you write to a convicted murderer? You know, so that's one side. And then, of course, motherhood as well. So when I wrote this book, I was pregnant with my second and looking after a toddler. So there's quite a heavy theme of motherhood in there as well.
Yeah, so I've read somewhere it's described as domestic noir.
I love that tagline.
Genre. I've never come across that genre before.
Well, don't they sort of class things like Gone Girl as domestic noir?
Yes, yeah. So sort of family sagas, page turners.
Uh-huh. Often relationships turned on their head, gone awry, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think the main question that, you know, they want the readers to think is, what would I do in that situation?
We just had a text come in, say, historians not so convinced of Gregory's historical credentials. Read somewhere that David Starkey described her writing as good Mills and Boone. I've heard that review before, but I heard lots of better ones as well. But there you go, to each their own.
Each their own, indeed.
So thank you so much, Karen, for coming in and talking about your Castaway books.
Thank you.
And good luck with the release of The Good Mother tomorrow. Can't wait to read it.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.